I'm Reinhard van der Berg.
And I'm Duncan MacLeod.
This is Talk Central, episode 251 for the week starting 10 February 2019.
Talk Central is brought to you by techcentral.co.za. You can WhatsApp the show. The number to use is 071-999-1111.
On Talk Central this week, the Minister of Communications interferes with an SABC news crew.
Also on the show, Microsoft really wants you to stop using Internet Explorer. Mm-hmm. MTN's Jumia is said to be planning a New York IPO, and Microsoft goes all in on gaming.
It's Sunday afternoon. We're live streaming at live.techcentral.co.za, and it's time to talk everything technology.
Welcome to the show. How's it, Reinhard?
How's it, Duncan?
Very good, thanks. How's your weekend treating you so far?
Yeah, quiet, nice, relaxed.
Quiet weekends are good weekends.
but it's end of the weekend, so that's not good. Not quite carte blanche time yet, but it's...
Yeah, I don't watch carte blanche anymore, but I used to get so depressed when it came home because I knew that was the end of the weekend.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, man.
I think I actually stopped watching it in part because it was making me depressed, just the thought of tomorrow's Monday, you know.
Yeah, very much. And that Sunday night movie never really helped ease the pain.
No, it didn't.
Yeah, no.
It didn't. But, let's dive into this week's tech news, and there's quite a bit to talk about. But before we get there, let's do our quiz.
The first question. Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos this week published a sensational blog post saying he was being blackmailed by which publication, which threatened to publish nude images of him.
What a story. Which two Kenyan telecommunications operators are said to be planning a merger to take on dominant provider Safaricom?
Third question. Eskom began load shedding again on Sunday for the first time since when?
And which cryptocurrency exchange may have lost $200 million in clients' investments after the company's CEO passed away, taking the keys to its digital wallets with him?
Man, there's a lesson, business lesson for everybody.
Indeed.
Wow. And the last question. Huawei has used artificial intelligence from its smartphones to create a completed version of which famous symphony?
Also a very cool story.
Yeah.
But we'll get to the answers to the quiz, as always, at the end of the show. But let's dive into this week's news. And this bizarre story that emerged last night. Minister of Communications, I don't know if you've had a chance to watch the video that the SABC posted on YouTube.
No.
The ANC was having a provincial election rally, I think it was, in the Eastern Cape, Mount Freer, rural part of the Eastern Cape. And apparently what happened was the SABC was present and filming the occasion when a large number of disgruntled ANC supporters stormed into the venue, loudly protesting against service delivery issues in the area. Now, what it appears happened is the Minister of Communications then walked up to the SABC camera crew and put a hand over the camera and instructed them to stop filming.
What?
Which
That's
is,
ridiculous.
Which is completely bizarre. The first thought I had was this, when I saw this story emerge, was that she thinks she has operational control over the SABC. And there's a distinct impression created that she has no respect for the SABC's editorial independence, which is, I believe, codified in South Africa's constitution. Mm-hmm. But she swiftly issued an apology on Twitter, saying that she regretted the incident and that she respects media freedom in South Africa. But it does, it really does make you, I mean, it really was a faux pas on her part. But it does make you wonder what her frame of mind was when she did this. Does she think she controls the SABC? Does she think she has the right to as the minister to order the boss the SABC around? You certainly get the impression that she felt that way. It's also very clear that she realized the error of her ways quite quickly when she issued the apology, and kudos to her for doing so. But still, the SABC is meant to be separate from the executive arm of government. It's a state-owned enterprise. It's a public broadcaster. But can you imagine if this happened in the UK, for example, imagine the British Minister of Communications or whatever that title happens to be in the UK, put his hand over a camera of the BBC, a BBC news crew. I mean, can you imagine the outrage?
I mean, yeah, especially because it's but I mean, I don't even know where to begin. The fact that she did it obviously means, you know, that was she had the intention to not want to share that. Maybe she put ANC first.
And, yeah, she clearly did.
That's kind of how you get to this thing. Apology or not, she's kind of played that card, you know.
Yeah.
I don't think if you really are an independent person within that role, you wouldn't have stepped up to them. You know, you wouldn't have ever done that. Not even
the constitutional. Yeah. Constitutionally enshrined independence of the SABC and its editorial.
And she should know that, right? I mean,
she's the Minister of Communications.
Well, exactly, that's what I'm saying. I mean, so for her to do a faux pas, I mean, I think
beggars belief.
Original's intent, yeah.
Beggars belief.
I mean, if it was maybe a smaller event and maybe a lesser news crew was there or a smaller news crew, she probably could have gotten away with it. Right?
I don't know, but I mean, kudos to the SABC for standing up to her and reporting this.
Well, exactly, but yeah, I mean, I guess we're speculating now, but it should never happen, not from somebody of that in that position.
Yeah. But I think a lot of kudos must go to the SABC and the journalist involved who was reporting this, who then went live on air with Peter and Dora, who's the anchor back in the studio, to explain what happened. You know, there could have been blowback. There might still be blowback, but the SABC just decided, you know, this is a serious incident and we need to report on it, which is exactly what they did. SANEF, the South African National Editors Forum, has since condemned the incident and requested a meeting with Ndebeni Abrams. But, yeah, kudos to the SABC for standing their ground.
Yeah, it's nice to see the SABC's, the news department has for a while now really been doing some interesting things. And yeah. I've... It's good to see that, you know, they've really picked up some of the top news people in South Africa too.
Yeah,
so
they have.
Kudos to them.
Yeah. So there we go. I'm not sure what else we can say on that subject. It was just a bizarre development. Came out later.
Look, I do hope something happens because this can't happen. You know, this can't happen again. And also, if it goes to the state of mind of the person in charge, doesn't it, according to question, is she really the best person for that role?
Exactly. She hasn't been in that role for very long. She was formerly the Deputy Minister of Telecommunications and Postal Services and formerly the Deputy Minister of Communications. Now, she's, of course, in charge of merging these two departments now. Ramaphosa, the President, announced a couple of months ago now that those two departments will be merged into one, and she's going to head it up. Of course, there are rumors of a major cabinet reshuffle happening after the next election, which is now, we know, scheduled for the 8th of May. Ramaphosa said in his State of the Nation speech that they're looking at a reconfiguration of government, and the talk is that there's going to be a drastic reduction in the number of cabinet ministers.
Fantastic news.
Yeah, that's fantastic news. Perhaps this is too speculative, but one wonders if she would have rushed out that apology so quickly if she wasn't keenly aware that there's a major cabinet reshuffle happening in a couple of months' time.
Exactly, but that's why these little things need to be taken further and just kind of it needs to be looked into. I think. I mean, I don't know what the outcome should be, but yeah, we can't have these little things happening. I mean, that's why most of government is in the state that it is, because people aren't, you know, again looking at the best, what's in the best interest of the people, not themselves or the party.
Yeah. Kudos to I do respect her for the fact that she rushed out and issued an apology, though. It was the right thing to do. You know, people make mistakes. Maybe we should give her the benefit of the doubt on this one for now. But it's not the first time she's courted controversy. You recall just a few weeks ago on Twitter, she told Vodacom to shut up over the Nkosana Makate, please call me thing, tweet, which she later deleted without explanation. Mm. I think she is quite young. She's one of the youngest members of cabinet. Perhaps she just needs to be a little more cautious. Let's put it that way.
Oh man.
interesting stuff. Never a dull moment in this country.
At least we get another YouTube clip to enjoy. I'll be sure to go check that out after this.
Yeah, yeah. I've embedded it in the story on Tech Central if you want to get easy access
awesome.
To it. So in other bizarre news, this time on the international stage, Microsoft, their head of security, global security, has issued published a blog post really asking people to stop using Internet Explorer. And my first reaction to this was, who the hell is still using Internet Explorer? And why?
Yeah, that is a very good question. But I think in the same token, there's a lot of machines probably running slightly older versions of Windows too, and those are the machines probably most vulnerable to this whole Internet Explorer, because most all of the new machines now come with Edge, right? With Windows. Windows come with Edge. So
Edge,
these are only old machines.
It's not only though, as the guy pointed out in his blog post, a lot of companies are still using Internet Explorer because they develop these legacy web apps, corporate web apps using Internet Explorer, which were never updated for modern web browsers. So if you're trying to run them in Chrome or Edge or one of those browsers, they don't work properly. So you find a lot of corporates are still using Internet Explorer for their bespoke web apps that they've developed in-house that haven't been maintained or updated. And what Microsoft said was, okay, guys, you can continue using Internet Explorer for that. We understand you've got these legacy applications that you need to use, and they're only supported in Internet Explorer. But please, if you do not need Internet Explorer, stop using it. And please, beyond those web apps, don't use Internet Explorer as your day-to-day driver on the web, which apparently a lot of people are still doing.
Yeah, see, we actually now talking about something really interesting, this legacy technology that we never really had a problem with, right? I mean, up until, technology only really became old with the advent of all this fancy software we're running now. I mean, up until, I think, up until XP, maybe 7, maybe Windows 7 or so, things really became a bit crazy on that front. it's something we're going to need to figure out how to solve going forward. A lot of businesses, a lot of banks still have this problem with legacy software. If you have such a vulnerable piece of such a vulnerable app that really is your gateway to your computer and the internet, and it's just causing these problems, I don't know how else you can tell people to stop using it.
But I'm sure that you're right. There's probably a lot of home users who are still running Windows XP or Windows Vista, and people aren't tech savvy who just have always used Internet Explorer, and they just keep using it because they don't know any better.
No, they don't know anything else. If you just use some mails, do some basic web browsing like so many people do, you don't need anything else than that old beige machine that you bought 20 years ago, right? Or let's say 10 years ago. But it's going to be interesting to see. I guess with everybody's starting to use cell phones more and more, smartphones, the being able to share that information is going to be a lot easier in the future, about old tech and kind of what to do and what not to do. But
I suppose increasingly those home users who do have that old beige box under the desk are increasingly using their smartphones to do a lot of what they did with that PC in the past, like using a banking app, for example, instead of using internet banking on their PC, browsing the web on their phone, Facebook, all that sort of thing. So they're probably using that PC a lot less than they used to.
And I think a lot of your bank and those things would definitely tell you you can't use Internet Explorer.
I haven't tried it.
I'm sure it does, because I remember there was a time just towards the end of Internet Explorer, my banking page wouldn't work.
Oh, right.
So I don't know. It's actually worth checking. It might be worth checking. But I would imagine that the banks would send out notifications for this because it's such an unsecure browser now.
And they've also announced they're stopping support for all versions of Internet Explorer, I think pre-version 11, which I think was the last version. Was there a version 12? I think there might have been a 12.
I think there might have been a 12, yeah.
Internet Explorer, if you're still using it, although I strongly suspect not a single person listening to this podcast uses Internet Explorer as their primary browser. But there might be one.
Maybe. But you're right. It's with cell phones, people are using it less, using their PCs for this type of thing less. Doesn't make it any less secure.
Yeah.
Especially when they go into Facebook with it.
Yes, yes.
I don't know.
Oh, interesting. Interesting stuff. Being tech savvy, I find I end up sometimes supporting people who are not tech savvy at all. So, you know, you go to a friend's house and they've got an old computer, and it's actually terrifying when you fire this thing up. You go to Windows Update and they haven't installed updates in like 3 years.
Yeah, that's a scary reality too. I mean, there's a lot of people like that who don't need anything else. You know, they print out maybe some work that they've done some research for. You know, school work or whatever, some office work.
Yeah.
We are very privileged with our kind of tech savviness, and I'm sure most of our listeners too.
Yeah.
But I'm sure most of our listeners are also tech support for their extended friends and family.
True.
But yeah,
very true. Very true. So there we go. Internet Explorer, it's still out there. I actually, as a matter of interest, I went into Google Analytics on Tech Central to have a look at what percentage of our readers were accessing the website using Internet Explorer, and it was down to 0.4%.
Well, that's interesting. So there was one hit to that site maybe a while ago or two.
Well, quite a few actually. 0.4% of our total traffic is still a fairly significant number. But, if you looked at that 2 or 3 years ago, it was probably sitting at 10%. So it's almost gone. It's almost gone. I think if you look at if you're a general news site like News24 or something like that, you'd probably still find Internet Explorer is higher than, quite a bit higher than that still.
I guess old laptops too. I mean, a lot of old laptops where you wouldn't run any of the new Windows. I mean, you'd still be running Windows 7 because nothing new would run on it, right?
Yeah.
And I've seen a few old notebooks floating around, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, interesting times.
Are they still hold out to use Windows 7? I know there was a lot of resistance, particularly amongst the gaming community, to moving to Windows 10 from Windows 7. A lot of people said, "Well, no, we're not upgrading. We're staying with Windows 7."
No, not as much anymore. Not really from anything that I've heard recently. But there are. I have heard of people that don't want to upgrade to the new Windows 4 for development reasons, or they have something that they're running that can't. You know, it's just a custom setup of something that just can't run on new Windows.
Okay.
I guess old hacks are going to die hard.
Yeah, I'm one of those people who gets FOMO if I don't install the latest version immediately it comes out. What do you mean there's a Windows update available? Install now.
Do it now. Automatically install. What are you talking about? But like I found out to my horror, when you transfer this, or when you look at this scenario within the gaming sphere, so I play PUBG, and I record a lot of my gameplay footage that I use for certain videos and things just to throw some background clips in.
Yeah.
The other day when there was an update, I didn't export any of my hottest gameplay moments for the last month.
Yeah.
Well, I saved them into PUBG, but I didn't export them. So with the new update, I couldn't play back any of those old clips. So they're all kind of wasted now.
Oh, no.
So, yeah, even with updating to the latest, I mean, there's always a reason why you might want to hold off for a day or two just to check.
Yeah, I know a lot of people who hold off for a couple of weeks after a major update is released just to make sure there's no. And we had an incident with Microsoft pushing an update that was bricking people's computers last year. Remember that?
Yeah. You see, it could happen as long as your data's backed up. I mean, we kind of live in the forefront of tech, so
everything's in the cloud.
We do need to experience these things, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, we should really not be running all of our production machines with all the latest software, but we do.
Of course.
Living dangerously.
But you're right. Everything's in the cloud. I automatically save all my documents that I'm working on in OneDrive. So, if my hard drive was to, the heads were to crash or something, I'll lose all my data. I actually wouldn't care. I'd just put another hard drive in, install Windows, and I'm on the go again because everything's in OneDrive or Google Drive.
Yeah, it's a fantastic time to be alive, Duncan.
Yeah, how did we cope before this?
I don't know how I lived with our Dropbox. I mean,
yeah,
having all my most important data available on all my devices, it's just made such a difference. You know, it's essentially having that external drive just everywhere.
Yeah, yeah. All right, we're going to take a quick ad break. We'll be back right after this with some more news.
Let me level with you. Everyone's got flippin' fast fiber. That's how it should be. You need to live beyond speed to hack your life, to take your life to the next level. Everything's smart. Everything's instant. Forget TV subscriptions. Educate yourself. Start your own business. Do more. Be more.
Okay, Dad. So, can I get Fortnite?
With connectivity, voice, IoT, business solutions, and so much more. Get smart. Think smart. Level up with Vox. Visit vox.co.za and level up today.
BitCo is revolutionizing the way businesses connect. We're taking on your connectivity challenges and shooting our high-speed fiber internet across the country. Not just for some, but for everyone. Fiber is not a luxury, but a necessity. For business, for life, for you. And being connected is everything. So network with a Tier 1 internet provider and take your business to the next level of connectivity. BitCo.co.za. Connectivity is everything.
Well, welcome back to the show. How's it, Gerhard?
How's it, Duncan?
Very good, thanks. So, MTN's Jumia, they're the largest shareholder in Jumia. Do you know Jumia? They own Zando in South Africa, I think. If you go to Jumia's website and click South Africa, it goes through to the Zando website, so I presume they own them. They're very big in Nigeria. They're almost like the Amazon.com of Nigeria. Started by two French guys. And they've done well in some African markets, e-commerce mainly. And they're planning a listing on the New York, or in New York. I'm not sure which stock exchange they're going to float on. But they're talking about a listing that would raise, $1.5 billion US dollars. So a very successful African unicorn. So businesses with startups with a valuation of above $1 billion are unicorns.
Yeah.
They're planning a listing, and the talk is Bloomberg reported this week that that MTN may look to sell its stake as part of through the IPO process. So yeah, they're gonna potentially use billions of rand from that they'll get through this IPO to reduce their debt, which is at quite a high level at the moment. But it's interesting to see a. An African success story of this scale. It's been interesting to see if they proceed with that listing. It's a pity they're listing in New York, but and not an African stock market. Maybe they'll have a secondary listing. It's not clear yet. It's all rather speculative about their plans.
But I guess with the tech space, a lot of guys do have their eyes on the bigger economies.
Yeah, and I suppose
before their listings,
tech companies. Certainly are attracting very high valuations in the US at the moment, so maybe that's the rationale behind considering a New York listing.
Interesting stuff. At least I don't have to worry about paying some please call me services, eh? The money doesn't have to be raised towards that purpose.
And the last story this week is something you picked up, Rehat, about Microsoft going all in on gaming. This sounds quite interesting. Tell us about it.
So, for the last many years, the conversation around bridging the various platforms for gaming, so playing on one console with a PC game or another, or on your phone with a Xbox player or whatever.
Yeah.
So those kind of plans have always been floating around, and with the likes of Steam, the networks have obviously, with some games, there are some games on Steam that you can actually play across multiple platforms. But Microsoft, in their latest update, has started showing plans and included features to bring Xbox Live to other platforms. So they want to run Xbox Live on iOS, Android, Nintendo, Switch, Xbox, and then obviously Windows. So they're clearly going to provide a platform similar to a Steam with a back end that allows anybody on any platform to play against each other. Now the problem is what they've picked up so far. One of the main issues is that some of the there's these anti-piracy software that runs so that to make sure that people like Battle.net to make sure that people don't
DRM software.
DRM and check that all the files on and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
That's still not working properly within this platform. You can imagine there could be a lot of a lot of issues around that because you don't just have one platform that you can relatively easily lock down.
Yeah.
Although cheating is still a very big thing regardless of these measures in place. But yeah, Microsoft is stepping up again. I think taking gaming a lot more seriously now. I mean, I speak to so many people on databases. Some of them surprised by the growth in gaming, and others are diehard gamers, new and old. Mm. It's definitely become more of a lifestyle.
It's really interesting to see them going cross-platform like that. It's the new Microsoft. I mean, Microsoft Office on the iPad is an absolutely fantastic piece of software. It's like a first-class citizen now, whereas in the past they didn't even consider that platform. They happened to have one for the Mac, but it was never It was never on a par with the Windows version, but they're very clearly going for a multi-platform strategy now. So it's not just Windows anymore.
Exactly, and that's what we needed. I mean, they were so stuck in that thinking, trying to make every machine a Windows-based machine when they should have just been, I mean, yes, they had the strongest platform, but, you know, as time progressed and they kind of lost their edge, this is the best thing that they could do. And the quality of their stuff has always been, the quality of their software and their hardware has always been good. So with this kind of thinking, I'm sure we're going to see a lot of interesting things coming back from them. I mean, hopefully some proper Microsoft peripherals, you know.
So this update, operating system update, I presume this is just for people in the dev testing, the fostering.
Within the testing program, the developers testing program. So it's not out yet, but look, within this year, we'll definitely start seeing more active things on the gaming front from Microsoft, without a doubt. And this is a hint to it. I mean, you just need one or two partners, maybe a phone partner like Samsung usually is with some of these brands. You know, when they produce a new phone, oh, we've got Microsoft Xbox Live on here, first phone to do so, bloody bloody blah. So I think we're going to see some stuff coming from Mobile World Congress potentially.
Well, I don't know. Do they announce gaming stuff at that? They might. I don't know.
It won't be a main announcement, but if a brand like a Samsung, you know, launches a feature set and say coming later this year for Microsoft Xbox Live on our platform launching or something, they'll definitely want to take that opportunity.
So we're heading into the next console cycle quite soon. The PlayStation 5 is rumored to be coming out in 2020. And Microsoft is reportedly working on what I see many websites are terming the Xbox 2. I don't know if they'll call it that.
No, I don't think so.
But I do wonder whether this move by Microsoft is a smart one that'll help the Xbox gain ground against the PlayStation. In the current console generation, it's very clear that Sony has the upper hand. They've been doing very well, great exclusive releases. If I was going to buy a console, which I'm not going to, but if I was going to buy one, I'd almost certainly go for the PS4 over the Xbox right now. But maybe that's going to change, especially with Microsoft doing stuff like this.
Well, this is, you're hitting the nail on the head, and they've got the platform, they've got Windows machines, they've also got a very strong console crowd. So if you can match these things together, you own the hardware and the console. The console is a fantastic piece of hardware, but it's essentially a PC, right? All of these consoles are just PCs. Yeah. So technically being able to do this isn't a stretch. And that's the one thing that consoles always lacked. I mean, it's improved a lot over the last few years, but over the last decade or so, you know, with online play, that kind of thing. Mm. But PCs always still reigned supreme. You know, a lot of the games, in terms of technical capabilities, PC gamers are still PC. Gamers still prefer PCs in many situations, many scenarios with guys that I speak to as well.
Yeah.
But the console, I guess the only thing, well, it's not really a thing anymore. The controller, because you can use your keyboard now with. It's up to the game developers to incorporate that. But with the Xbox, you can use your keyboard and mouse.
Yeah.
For games too, so the line is definitely blurring a bit.
Yeah, and you can use an Xbox controller on PC as well now.
Yes, exactly. There's no reason to maybe opt for one or the other. A console is cheaper, definitely. A PC is more expensive in many ways, and you can upgrade. So it depends on what your underlying goal is. But I've had many, many happy years of console gaming. And you can't really say one is better than the other. If you really enjoy the games you play on console, it's the best thing ever. So
it depends. Preference. Yeah, it really depends on the type of game you're playing. And if you're home alone and you want to do some gaming, you're probably going to want to do that on a PC. But if you've got friends around and you play more of a social game, then you're probably going to want to play it in your lounge on your console.
Yeah, perhaps, but there are a lot of gamers would have in their room or their study or whatever, they would have a small screen with a dedicated
console
set up there.
Yeah,
similar like you would have with a PC game. But yes, the lounge element of it, the more social element of it, is definitely console's domain.
Yeah,
without a doubt. But consoles are easy to use as well. I mean, I remember I lost my love for PC gaming a few years ago because it just got pricey and drivers, and I battled with a few games. It just didn't want to run properly.
Yeah.
Then Xbox came along, and I just had a lot of fun with it.
Yeah, there's no doubt that PC gaming is a major investment.
It is. But once you've got it, I mean, you know, now you start doing a lot of other things. Your PC is a multi-purpose, so my machine also renders a lot of videos. So, you know, it's a business expense, and it's a... You know, it's like a nice downtime relaxation tool.
Yes, yes. But I suppose if you don't, you know, if you don't use your home PC for that sort of thing, if you're, you know, an office-bound worker, you come home in the evening, you might prefer a console, especially if you're a casual gamer.
Yes, yes, definitely. No, that consoles make so much sense. Mm-hmm. And they're just easy. The updates happen automatically. You don't have to worry about them. You know, you either play or you don't play. Like, there's no driver update required, and it's going to crash before you can play. It's easy.
Great stuff. Well, that takes care of our news this week. Rechot, our picks of the week, it's all on you again for a second week in a row, I'm afraid. I've been casting about for a pick, but clearly I'm not playing with enough gadgets. I need to get some more gadgets in my hands.
Yeah, definitely.
Because for the second week in a row, it's all up to you.
Okay, well, it's...
No pressure.
Let's just... I wasn't going to go for anything overly dramatic. You know the love of RGB within the PC gaming culture?
Yes.
RGB everywhere. And I don't know how it happened and why it's such a fascinating thing, but I, for one, love it. The colors just make everything slightly better in that sense, you know? It makes hardware look slightly nicer.
Makes your PC look like something out of a 1970s disco.
Exactly, and there's just so much you can do, especially with nice RGB lit RAM, for example. But not all hardware comes with RGB lighting. So what do you do when you want to add RGB and you don't have that? You get the next product that I've picked. It's called the Thermaltake Pacific Lumi Plus LED Strip. And there are three LED strips and a controller box that you plug into your PC. And these are beautiful RGB LEDs. I mean, they really produce some nice colors. And you can program them in a million different ways. Set them to color up depending on the temperature of your machine. Or you can do rainbow effects or pulsing effects. There's a lot of things you can do with the software. You can even install an app and then control it from your phone if you so wish. To configure your lights if you want to impress somebody.
I'm just wondering who would be impressed by this.
I don't know, friends.
Fellow geeks.
But you can also use these strips. I mean, they're magnetic strips too, which is nice. So they just kind of slap into the inside of your case. But a lot of guys also actually use these and put it behind their screen against the wall because you can also stick them to a piece of wood or something. So you can actually mount this around your desk, underneath your desk, if you want that hot YouTuber RGB look in your study. The pack goes for
about... Or for Saturday nights when you're listening to ABBA.
Oh, yes, and they didn't need to get like a sound to light add on so that they pulse to the sound of the music.
Yeah, and put a little a little glitter ball inside your case.
Oh, that's the next step, Duncan. Don't worry. I'm just waiting for Thermaltake to release one of those, and done. I'm there. So this little thing has got 16.8 million colors, 12 LED physical LED lights that's split up into the three strips. And there's various modes, like I said, that you can play with. It's a very cool set, and it makes it, especially if you don't have RGB, but I'm actually considering using it around my desk just to make things look a little bit more lively.
So what does this LED strip look like? Can you actually cut it with a pair of scissors?
No. So I don't know if you've ever been to a builder's warehouse and bought LED strips there.
Yeah.
They look very, kind of little square LEDs on this rubberized, bendable strip that's about 20 centimeters long, I think.
Yeah, I've seen them.
And they interlock. So you can actually interlock more if you can buy add-ons. And so there comes the three in the pack, but you can add however many you want to just extend, to add on more lights. So this is just, it's very similar to those you find in builders, but these are obviously designed for gaming. It's got the magnetic strip.
Yeah.
It's black instead of white. Each RGB light obviously is addressable with the controller box. So they're not interchangeable. So you can't use this with that builder set because it won't know, how to address the LEDs. I haven't tried it because I don't want to blow the LEDs either. But Yeah, it makes quite a big difference if you're into that sort of thing, Duncan. If your PC sits on your desk, then you definitely want to get one of these.
Right, I'll come visit your disco sometime soon and check it out.
Yeah, the keyboard also lights up, so everything RGB.
And fire up the Bee Gees.
Oh, yes, Saturday Night Live.
All right, so hopefully in our next show I'll be back with a pick. I'm going to be actively seeking something out. I just haven't installed anything, apps or anything lately that's really grabbed my attention. But
But it has been a relatively quiet, there hasn't been anything majorly exciting over the last few weeks.
You're right. That
made me go, whoa, I think everybody is holding out for
Mobile World Congress.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
All the cool tech bits.
Yeah. So, what else do we need to do? I guess we just need to... Oh, winner and loser of the week.
Winner and loser.
So our loser this week is Eskom for re-implementing load shedding. I think enough said there. Luckily, neither of us has been load shed today, so we can record this podcast without the sound of inverters and generators and stuff. And our winner this week is Jeff Bezos for calling the bluff on the National Enquirer, which is this really sordid tabloid in the US, a letter from their publisher to Bezos threatening to publish nude images of nude selfies of Jeff Bezos. Not clear how they got hold of them, and Bezos has hired private investigators to investigate how exactly they got hold of these images. But kudos to Bezos for standing up and not caving into what really amounts looks like blackmail by this publisher, and posting a blog post on Medium and saying, "Well, damn you! I'm not going to be bullied and blackmailed by you. This is the case, and I'm going to put this in the public domain so that people know about it." So, well done to him.
Yeah, I hope they take it further, though, because this kind of thing also, you can't have people, I mean, it's outright legal to begin with.
Yeah.
I mean, I hope there's further consequences. But the thing I wanted to say was, I wonder why people take so many nude selfies or nude photographs.
Yes.
I mean, that's kind of probably the first thing, right? If you don't want just that stuff out there, just don't take it.
Well, there was that famous incident of Leah Laporte, of course, the podcaster in the US, who took a picture of part of his anatomy, and he was on doing a live show, video podcast, scrolling through the photos, I think on his iPhone or his iPad or something, and said picture suddenly appeared. And
in between family photographs.
Exactly.
Yeah,
quite and he quietly flicked it away as if it wasn't there. That was good fun.
It's so funny. Look, to each their own, definitely. And I guess I can see the appeal if people like to share that type of thing.
Yeah. I would never put pictures like that on my phone.
But especially if you're, I don't know how old these particular pics were, but especially if you're a celebrity or somebody that's in the public domain, I mean, yeah.
Yeah. But I'm sure CEOs around the world were certainly those who were taking those sort of photos after this Bezos incident have gone and checked if they've got any of them on their phone and deleted them promptly.
But we know they never actually delete today.
Yeah, they're always in a backup somewhere.
Yeah, and if the hacker stole, if the hacker stole it a year ago, you wouldn't know, right?
Yeah,
that's terrible. Terrible, this digital era we live in.
I wonder if it came the National Enquirer got these pictures through a cloud service.
Well, somebody must have got hold of them and took it to the Enquirer to sell it to them for some money.
Yeah,
especially if Bezos denied, if he just kind of brushed it off.
Yes.
If they were contacted first, I don't know.
Yeah. Sorted stuff.
He should just publish it himself and then put it out there.
No, please don't, Jeff. Please don't. That's the last thing we need to see all over the internet.
No, not that anybody wants to see it, but if it's, it loses its value, right?
True, but please don't do that. Excuse me. I need a drink of water. So, that's our show.
Podcast went downhill,
Podcast went rapidly downhill there. I'm away next week, so we're not going to have a show next weekend, but we'll catch up again the following week. And then we're hoping to have Aki Anastasiou back on the show in a couple of weeks' time. He's off to Mobile World Congress. So he's kindly agreed to come on the show and tell us all about what he saw there. So really looking forward to that. I think it'll probably be in about 3 weeks' time now. I think the Mobile World Congress event is happening at the end of this month, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, and early March normally too, depending on how the weekends fall, I think.
Yeah. So, yeah, look forward to having him on the show and unpacking everything that happens at this year's Mobile World Congress. We've, of course, got the Samsung Galaxy S10 launch coming up in 10 days from now on the 20th of February. Looking forward to that. Looks like Samsung, I mean, there have been so many leaks of this device already, we know what it looks like. They're getting rid of the, they're not even going to do a notch they're on the Galaxy series. They're jumping straight from... they're jumping straight to a what do they call it, a pinhole a camera on the front, which is a much more elegant solution, I think, than the notch. But rumors that they're going to announce a 5G high-end model, possibly also a folding phone. So we'll get all the details of that soon. And Huawei has also got some big announcements coming up at Mobile World Congress, and they're in a battle with Samsung for the number one position in smartphones. So no doubt they're going to come up with some interesting stuff as well. Rumors of a foldable phone, and leaks are starting to come out about the Huawei P30. I can't believe it's been almost a year since the P20 came out.
Am I the only one that feels that this it's too quick? We are seeing too many things happening too quickly in terms of tech. Like we kind of lost that one big thing a year, and then everybody just kind of tries to follow it.
Yeah.
Now everybody seems to be in the same race, and it's just about producing more, better, with extra features every year.
Yeah.
We're getting tech fatigue to a degree.
A lot of the companies are in the same sort of cadence as Apple now, though. They do a major release, then an incremental release, a major release, and an incremental release. Samsung.
Maybe time's just going by quicker. Maybe that's just maybe it's not, you know, the actual tech cycle. It's just
that's true.
Just this time cycle seems to be feels a lot quicker than.
I read a great article recently. Actually, I forget where, explaining why as you get older, time goes faster, or the perception of time it becomes faster. You know, when you're a kid, you know, the summer holidays go on forever. And now the years are flying past as if they were weeks.
And your reference for time is so much more, because when you're a kid, you only have like 5 years of memories at the age of
five.
Exactly. 2 years of memories.
That's what the article said, yeah. So when you get older, you know, everything, the perspective of time changes.
Yeah, for sure. But I mean, and adding on to that, I mean, the reason why I'm saying what the tech seems to move so quickly, because if I look at the tech that I'm using at the moment, it's fantastic stuff, and I can't imagine what is more, better, faster about it. And I think maybe that's where I'm also coming from. Like, I really don't see any need to spend more money on new tech. Although, as I say that, something's going to launch, and I say, I'm going to have that, right? But like with a cell phone, I mean, cell phones, you know, if you get a high-end cell phone these days, it really is just that good.
Yeah, provided you don't drop it.
For sure, for sure. And if your upgrade cycle is, you know, in the right time,
yeah,
you know, this year stuff will kind of come in handy for you. End of this year, you'll get all this new stuff that was released or launched this year.
In the past, I think a lot of people could, you know, we're on the sort of 2-year upgrade treadmill, and I think it was in part because the operators had 24-month contracts, but I think people are starting to shift out of that now, and it's sort of drifting to a sort of a 3-year upgrade cycle.
Yeah, that's where I am. I upgraded last year just because I needed to, even though we were both dead set against it, right, or I was dead set against it, now we both have... Well, you don't have a contract. You're still with Telkom on your...
Yeah,
your,
no, but I'm on a month-to-month. No, I'm on a contract now.
Oh, are you? Okay.
It's still a month-to-month. Well, it's not a month-to-month contract, but what Telkom does, which is nice, is they separate the airtime from the handset deal. So if I wanted to switch to another network, I'd continue to pay Telkom for the handset for a period of 24
fantastic.
Months. But
that's fantastic.
I could switch to another operator because that's on a month-to-month.
But yeah, like you said, that 3-4 year cycle, I think that's true. But yeah, with all the new tech, I think 2020 is going to be a very interesting year. I don't know, I've just got a feel.
With 5G coming, I mean, 2020 is going to be the year of 5G.
And also, we're seeing a lot of maturity in IoT. I mean, I've seen a lot of things within the industry of people planning within the next year to do some really cool stuff.
Yeah.
And yeah, all of these little things with a device in your hand, there's lots you can do with that.
Yeah, IoT is very exciting. Maybe a subject for a future episode.
Oh, yes.
Great. Well, that's our show. Apart from our quiz results and our song pick, which is mine this week, I've got an old rocker. Don't know if you know the song, Rehat, but it's...
from another band. I don't know the song.
Yeah, one of my favorite bands of the 1970s. Just showing you how far back we're going this week. And no, it's not ABBA. but let's do our quiz results before we get to that. Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos this week published a sensational blog post saying he was being blackmailed by which publication, which threatened to publish nude images of him. And that's the National Enquirer.
Second question, which two Kenyan telecommunications operators are said to be planning a merger to take on dominant provider Safaricom? And the answer is Telkom Kenya and Airtel.
And Eskom, damn you, began load shedding again on Sunday for the first time since when? And that's 9 December 2018. So it's been 2 months and a day.
And the fourth question, and this, I can't believe this happened. This is crazy. Which cryptocurrency exchange may have lost $200 million in clients' investments after the company CEO passed away, taking the keys to its digital wallets with him? And the answer is Quadriga CX.
Odd name. And our last question in the quiz this week. Huawei has used artificial intelligence from its smartphones, in fact it was the Mate 20 Pro, to create a completed version of which famous symphony? Now they haven't released this yet. Apparently it's coming out later this month, and I can't wait to hear it because it's going to be very interesting to hear. But the answer is Schubert's Symphony No. 8, more commonly known as the Unfinished Symphony.
Interesting.
So yeah, watch out Beethoven.
Yeah, we're seeing AI being put to task to do a couple of interesting things, but a lot of it's rather, I guess, repetitive learning. It's kind of it needs to understand something, and we're making AI, I guess, better in that sense. Yeah. It's fascinating, absolutely fascinating.
For sure. As always, any feedback on the show, the number to use 071-999-1111. WhatsApp only, please. As I mentioned earlier, there'll be no podcast next week, but I'll be back in, unless Rehat decides he's going to do one in my absence, which Rehat, you're most welcome to do.
Maybe there'll be a mystery podcast.
Podcast. Watch out for that. But otherwise we'll be back in 2 weeks' time. And we're playing out today with, one of my favorite bands of all time from the 1970s, a band called Blue Oyster Cult, American, rock band. Off their 1974 album, Secret Treaties. This album, or the song rather, is called Astronomy. Until next time, cheers.
Ciao, ciao.
crisis of the crisis and the origin of storms. Just bled too hopelessly and counted time.